teaching people with visual impairments is very different from being somebody who has a visual impairment and learning how to step into that identity, not only for yourself, but then to turn around and teach it to others and to be able to help empower them to step into their identity as people with visual impairments. That's got to be an incredible life. And it really sounds like it is. In today's episode, we hear from Dr. Cindy Balkofer, who has her PhD. This will come later, and you'll get the joke later. And she also has an incredible history that you definitely will not want to miss.
Welcome to A Step Forward, a podcast for ambitious VI specialists who are challenging the status quo. I'm Cassie Maloney, your new work bestie. With over 15 years of experience as an O&M specialist, author, professional development junkie, mom, and owner of Allied Independence, I have been through the ringer. And now I'm here to bring you a boost of inspiration, information, and our favorite, innovation, as we trade feeling overwhelmed for overjoyed while we create a significant impact in the lives of our learners and still lead more balanced, fulfilling lives. So grab your favorite beverage because we're about to take a step forward.
Welcome back to the podcast. You know, I'm really loving doing these presenter series because I get to meet all these really cool people. But in this case, I got to sit down with somebody that I already have known and somebody who's been a mentor to me for many years. Cindy was somebody that I could call at any time when I first started my career, and I could be like, hey, teach me how to teach monocular skills, please, because there's just not enough time in university programs for you to get it all. And luckily, we both worked at the same place, and she was always willing to help me. And I will never, ever, ever forget that. Professional to professional, person to person, when somebody's there and willing to help you, it makes things so much easier and so much better. And you can start to see them in this really cool light that I have always seen Cindy as. And now I have also been to a conference out of state where we got to hang out together, and I continue to learn from Cindy all the time. Cindy Balkofer, PhD, CLVT, is the low vision consultant at the Texas School for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Austin, Texas. She completed her doctorate at Vanderbilt University in 2013. The title of her dissertation is Long-Term Use of Optical Devices by Young Adults with Low Vision. She is a certified low vision therapist. Her teaching interests include use of optical devices, print reading strategies, and psychosocial issues for students with low vision. She previously served as a teacher of students with visual impairments and as a consultant with Project Providing Access to the Environment, PAVE, from 2001 to 2008 at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. Ms. Balkofer has also served as a literacy project leader with VISTA, Volunteers in Service to America, in Nashville, and as an English instructor at both the secondary and post-secondary level in Kansas. And that doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of all the amazing things that this wonderful woman has done with her life and all not only that she has accomplished, but that she has overcome to accomplish these things. I can't wait for you to get to know Cindy and to be able to walk away with tips and tools on how to approach your learners with low vision, really, because it's not just all about the strategy for teaching or, you know, this list of step-by-step tools that we're going to give them, but really helping them to step into the better version of themselves. Hi, Cindy. Thank you so much for coming on to this podcast.
Very happy to.
Oh, gosh. Me too. I'm so excited to get to dive into this conversation. I have so many questions for you. You and I know each other personally because we've worked together before. So I have a little bit of background, and most of my background about you, I just find fascinating, and I'm in awe of everything that you've accomplished and how much you helped me when I was a new teacher. And that is all great and dandy, but I'd love for our community to get to know you. Will you share a little bit about yourself, who you are, and maybe even how you got into the field?
I was a preemie baby born with ROP in Kansas in the early 60s. And that was just a time, I think there was very little information that, you know, did families receive support? Was there awareness of, you know, the resources they might need? So I grew up in a family of, there were five of us, very close in age. So it was kind of a lot of self-reliance. And if you want something, you better go make it happen. Because there were a lot of kids, fast, the pace was busy, and we were an active family. So it's just, I think I learned with siblings, you figure out how to ride a bike. Summer activities, we did camping and things like that. So it was a lot of outdoor time that I think helped me to find independence. And I participated in Girl Scouting. I give Scouting a ton of credit for helping me find that resilience and, you know, put up a tent, go make a fire, lead brownies on a hike. It was all very, very positive self-esteem. And when I look back, I really recognize, along with a strong family and having that outlet, I think framed who I am. I had never met a person who was visually impaired until I really think where I had conversation, it was in my 30s. So I came up through school just knowing I read differently. I had, up until about 25, I had vision in both eyes, but one eye was quite a bit stronger. So I read with that funny head tilt. I held it close. I was a slower reader than all my classmates, but I was a very good student. But I had no understanding of, well, I'm just odd or I'm slow because I don't keep up, because I didn't know anything differently. And my parents didn't have access to, you know, there's this group of kids out there who have low vision and they do things differently. So I did very well in school, attended college, and lost vision. The retina completely detached in my left eye in grad school. And it was a rough period. There was a string of 13 surgeries to try to keep the eye attached. Very good doctors, but a whole 4 months of kind of being in shock and still trying to stay in college and trying to help me and my family process what was happening. And at that time, I was actually introduced to a bioptic. You know, you're in your 20s, you're trying to look cool on campus and keep things together. And this was prescribed to me for full-time wear, which was this little black thing sticking out of a pair of glasses. It was kind of pretty awkward, I'll just say. I literally would have people on the sidewalk just stop and watch me. And you think back in Kansas in the 90s, and I say that because it's maybe a state that is not known for being progressive. So that it was a different thing. And at that time, because I was losing vision, I was trying to figure out what kind of work I could do. I had graduated, was getting frustrated. I was not a driver. I was living in small towns in Kansas. I was teaching at a community college at one point, another church-based college for residence life, and was just getting more and more frustrated. I'd always wanted to join the Peace Corps. And when I looked at that, because I had what's considered a progressive eye condition, they wouldn't accept me, which was devastating. And I then recognized, well, let's do VISTA, which I think at that point might've been called AmeriCorps. Then Volunteers in Service to America. Mm-hmm. And I know I was looking for a way. I've got to change something significantly. I was frustrated with limited transportation. I wasn't clear on my job path. And I just, you need to do a leap. So I took a VISTA position in Nashville, Tennessee, and did a literacy program for a year. First time to really ride the buses on my own. This is not quite country girl, but Kansas girl in the big city. It was exciting and terrifying. I don't know if you'll edit this out. I lived in subsidized housing and an independent living center for older adults because it was affordable on your VISTA salary. it was a beautiful campus. So I have lots of good memories at kind of striking out and figuring it out. And after that year, I had made contact with Voc Rehab counselor, and she commented, there's this lady at Vanderbilt University named Dr. Ann Korn, and she's looking for a secretary. You may want to pursue that. And I knew I wasn't going to continue the VISTA role. And it was humbling because it was, I have a master's degree. Do I want to go be a secretary? And people assured me, if you can get into Vanderbilt, do it, because doors will open. And I remember interviewing with Anne, and her second question to me, because she'd looked at my resume, why are you here? And I could tell just that she knew, there's some background here that's not matching up of why you're applying to be a secretary. So within a week, she had me signed up for the program for visual disabilities, and I started the Braille class.
Oh my gosh.
And I love in our field because, you can stand around at conferences or trainings and people that random question, how did you land in the field?
Yeah.
And again, people, well, I fell in it sideways.
Yes, you did.
I was a fourth grader and I had this idea and I've pursued it ever since. I don't know that many who say that. Mm-hmm. So from there, I was Anne's secretary for a year, and then I became a teacher with the Project PAVE, Providing Access to the Visual Environment, which was a state-funded grant to provide. We did clinics, 3 or 4 clinics a year. Students were referred. The students were from across the state of Tennessee. And then teachers, there were 4 of us, were assigned a caseload. And this was your group of kids that you would provide support for using, learning to use, and increasing your skill of handheld optical devices. Was our focus. And it was fabulous work. It felt so innovative because it was incredibly cross-disciplinary, where the optometrists, the TVI, us as the PAVE teachers, comms, sitting around a dinner table at 11 p.m. at night after we had clinic, done dinner, and reviewing the students' files and information that the doctors could share us on. So think about this when you're working with this student. It was fabulous. And I did that 3 or 4 years. And then decided to pursue the PhD and did the long path on that. Took a long time to complete it. And I remember there was some leadership change at Vanderbilt by 07-08. And I was what they call ABD, all but dissertation. I'd done all my coursework. It was just now get this thing written. And I took another leap. And I'd always heard about Texas School for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and I'd never worked for a state school. And I thought, well, let's try that. So I started my role at TSBVI in August 2008. I worked in short-term programs, and I love that model of bringing students together for 3 to 5 or more days doing intensive instruction. And I think at TSBVI, we all know the dorm magic, where in the evenings, the dorm staff helping the students to connect, to bond, to feel good about themselves, to recognize they bring something to the program, visually impaired or whatever disabilities you have. And we call them frequent flyers, where the students would just keep coming back because once they had a taste of it, I want more of this. So I worked in short-term programs for 6 years and then proposed the position of low vision consultant for campus because my rationale, those who have low vision are the greater majority of the visually impaired population. We have very little understanding of them because the range of eye conditions, the level of acuity, the amount of field, the issue with contrast sensitivity, light adaptation, all of that. It is so nuanced and so varied that I don't think, we want to give me the recipe. I have this low vision student. Okay, what do I do? Just give me the recipe. And it's not. I remember Dr. Randy Joes, longtime optometrist in Texas, commented, we're always tweaking. The recipe is never set. And I loved that. And then through graduate work, recognize I found my voice as somebody with low vision because I had no idea of the identity that I was struggling. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know how to talk about it. I didn't know how to feel good about myself. And through grad school, it had become, this is a part of you. It's not it's not the most important part of you, but it's good to be able to find, put words to it and have language for what helps me to see, what do I do for myself? What am I good? I'm okay with asking somebody to help. And once I became a professional, it was that energy and enthusiasm for, I want students to understand this. It took me well into my adulthood to find that. So becoming the low vision coordinator, we don't have a good understanding. Our research, we know research in the field is very limited, but for the categories of low vision or the types of low vision, they can so often get clumped into a study under a VI umbrella. And it varies a lot on the person with low vision. I read print, I adjust it, and I'm a slower reader, but I'm quite different from somebody who's 2400, sometimes uses print, uses a cane, but we're put under the same umbrella. So there's lots of differences that come along with that. And I think our personnel prep programs, they just kept more and more keeps getting added on their plate. Do this, now teach this and add this. So a whole class that can be devoted to low vision and the nuances of that doesn't happen very often. So we're a large part of the population. We don't have solid research. And I think teachers are, you'll figure it out along the way about low vision kids. So when I proposed this on campus, because the different departments we have at TSBVI, there really wasn't a organization system of how are the departments working together to support students with low vision, to help staff better understand visual efficiency, to identify resources that can be used across campus. So my position is kind of a bridge for outreach, trainings for either adults or staff, working with teachers and students on campus for increasing visual efficiency, using feeling good about tools and equipment that you use, understanding your eye condition, that psychosocial piece of how does society see me? How do I see myself? How do I feel good about that? So those are probably the primary pieces of my role. And, helping to organize trainings, doing on the road programs for students where we take it out to regions and do that use of tools, connecting, recognizing that you have peers like you who have low vision. It's a lot of fun to do those programs. So that's a summary.
Oh my gosh. I have so many questions, but I do need to clarify for those who are not in Texas, the way that Texas schools are set up, we have our independent school districts. They're pretty small. They're regulated to maybe around the city level. So like really small, not even county level. And then on top of those are regions. And we have 20 regions that help support those school districts. So that's what Cindy's talking about for those of you guys who aren't familiar with the Texas school system. So I kept thinking, I was really lucky to have you. You and I started at TSB around the same time, and I don't remember exactly where you were working, but I was able to tap into your knowledge to help me help my learners with monocular skills. And as you were teaching them, I got to see, okay, yes, because I need my way of teaching is my way of learning of step by step and then asking the Socratic questions, in between. Yeah. And you had that step by step. You taught me how to anchor and locate things and how to teach, basically, because you were able to be there to model it for my learners. And not everybody gets that opportunity. So I have always felt just not indebted to you, but just so grateful for your support and always being willing to help. Always like, yes, I will be there. Yes, what time do you need me? Yes. And so excited to help us because you're right. We aren't taught all of these skills at the university. And even if we were, if you don't have a student who needs those skills and then a decade goes by, you have to get back on the bike and you need that. support.
And I loved joining the O&M lessons because I always said to my students, I know, looking at stuff in the classroom, it's kind of boring. Let's take it outside. And that's where the fun comes in. And so much, there's so much in the world to see. It's so enriching. It's just endless of what, you know, that you can use the telescope for. And I'll do a promotion because we have the Teaching Telescope Skills, a free module that is in TSBVI Online Learning that is about an hour. You can get CEUs. Kind of what you said, it goes through the step-by-step of building that sense of it's a set of skills and how we can introduce students to that.
Perfect, because I was going to ask, how do people get a hold of you? I know you're teaching at the symposium, but you know, when we need those things, how do we get a hold of you? So we will link that in the show notes and you can just send that link Great. Over to me afterwards. So that way everybody can get those. And of course, more CEUs never hurts. It's always good stuff.
Exactly.
And you can take
it's
it.
It's free.
It's free. And you can take it at a time that works for you too.
Yep.
So, I mean, all great things. I'm so glad that you guys have that option. So what is one of the challenges that you face in your role as it is now?
I think it's just still the awareness of how students can maximize the use of vision. And I always tell students, like using either a telescope or a cane, any of that, it's like adding a superpower to what you already have. It's going to help you be stronger, see further, travel more safely. And I think there's still, we've gotten better in our society of recognizing that disability is not bad. Disability is just differently abled. But there's still, you know, when I'm using a telescope in a store, people, you know, that, oh, sympathetic look. And I just, you know, my life is not bleak. And I always make the, you know, because I don't drive, I have ways to get around. I have multiple things in my toolbox that let me get where I want to go. And that's what I want teachers, families, neighbors, the public in the store to understand. With resources and strategies, we can get what we want. It won't be exactly how you do it as somebody who has typical vision, but we can still get there. It took me a long time to find my voice on, I am proud of the skills I have developed, the managing transportation, the seeing things I want to see, the figuring out the different, my reading lamp, my high plus glasses, my handheld magnifier, my enlarging print on the screen. All of those are part of the toolbox that lets me access print. And I want, you know, I still think we have limited understanding of that. And of our staff who, you know, professionals working with, depending how much have they been able to explore. I'll meet staff who have maybe only seen a 4X and an 8X telescope, not the different styles of scope, not an 8x30. With the wider lens, exit lens that lets more light in. Not a, you know, if a student has limited finger use, it doesn't have to be the round barrel one to roll it. It can be a slide bar. I call it the flat top one. And there's a range of devices out there, a range of tools for those who are blind, for accessing Braille. It's just, it's a constantly, probably why this field is exciting. We're ensured that our brain is going to keep growing because there is constantly new stuff for us to be learning. And I think that can be overwhelming sometimes. And depending on the resources, the network, the supports that a staff person has, it can be difficult. It can be a challenge to have that full potential awareness for our students.
I think you hit the nail on the head with lack of support. TSBVI, I will always say it is Cinderella's castle. I mean, it is as good as people say. If you have never been there or worked there and you're like looking on the outside in and idolizing it, it's about 98% of the goodness. I mean, no place is perfect, but it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So how would you suggest that teachers who don't have the support, you know, they don't have a low vision consultant that they can just call up in another building, go about learning about the different types of tools that are around?
I think starting with your administrator and helping that administrator understand, I have to keep learning. So I need a portion of time to be able to do that. And it can be overwhelming to navigate. You know, you put in a search for where do I go learn about telescope skills, and you get how many? 1,000 hits on Google. That's overwhelming. So I think finding your network, no matter how remote you are, because we have virtual connections now. And I think one of the greatest compliments, you've been complimenting me on, you know, I learned from Cindy and how much fun it was to have that interaction. I think it's the greatest compliment in the world. And I will give that to me, just I get energy out of that. And I'll do that at 7 p.m. at night. Not every day of the week. But it's, I want to support the person. I agree in this information needs to be, you know, moved forward. And I always learn in every interaction I have. That's, you know, I always say why we do presentations. Presentations are a lot of work. And, you know, one of the greatest fears in the public is stage fright. And every time I do one, it's swallow that stage fright and see what you can learn from this. So I think finding your network, if you do any kind of virtual meeting and you hear a voice that I like how he or she explains this, I think that person knows things I'd like to learn. What's the worst that can happen in saying, hey, could we do a half hour conversation and see, okay, what resources did this person use? Instead of navigating through the 1,000 hits on Google, ask those who you admire, give me an online, an archived webinar, a blog. We go to Perkins, Paths to Literacy, Paths to Technology. There's so much out there that those who have been doing this longer or have really found their niche, ask them for the resources. So I think getting the support from administration for, I have to keep building my skill base or I will not be serving our students appropriately. Finding that live person who can become to some degree a mentor, a resource, and then having time to either, whether it's reading, blogs, chapters, articles, or doing the online versions, which I think reading a chapter or an article because you're taking it in differently and have to kind of mull it over, I think both are valuable. I think that there's a lot of resources through virtual trainings now, but I think we also need to have some published materials as resources as well.
Absolutely. And things that you can take in by reading. I loved everything that you had to say. I'm getting your admin involved and reading blogs and articles, also reaching out to your network. One thing that I've seen a lot of people do at the symposium is, you know, we're in Zoom meeting, and so we are all chatting, and they will start talking with one another. And then we also have a way that people can add their contact information. So they'll either start DMing each other in the chat, and or we have a form that spits out a spreadsheet. It's a Google form and a Google spreadsheet. And then you can find the people who attended, and then they've made friends that way. And I know for me, my situation with the symposium is a little bit different, where I like to, you guys are my friends, so I can easily just be like, hey, I'm having this issue. But there's another O&M who also has her own small business, and she's in California. And so we did get together, and we just had a phone call, and we were just like, hey, what is it like over there? How are things? And so we can still text and ask each other questions, and having those resources really does help, because as contract staff, I love, love, love contracting, but I'm out there by myself. And most of the time I'm the only O&M in the whole district. And my admin has hired me, not because they know what I do, not because they really care, but just because they need to check a box so they don't get sued. And it's a very different work experience when your admin has no idea what you do. They don't really care unless you mess up. And you are so low on their priority pole that it's hard to get time with them. So having peers really does help. And like what you said, find those people and maybe they can even become a mentor. So many people in our field, even the people who write articles, I found you can just email them and be like, hey, I have a question.
Yep.
Nobody's ever
it's
been
the greatest compliment. And I think You know, because we are a low incidence population, it can be hard to get on the radar because, you know, there's a handful maybe of students in the whole district, if not just two. And if you can video a student struggling and how you're working with them or having an aha moment, how to get the attention of an administrator is that the phrase an exciting challenge, and it takes time. It's not going to happen in 4, 6, 8 months. You're kind of wooing them, I think, I want you to see how incredible this work is that we do as VI professionals. And I love it when our students get described as it's not necessarily smartest, but the talented, because they should all be engineers because they solve problems. That's the tagline for engineers. And our kids find workarounds that it just makes the day ever more interesting.
I want to hit on one last topic before our last question. And you mentioned a lot about identity, using devices as adding to your superpower, you mentioned. You also mentioned you growing up and Girl Scouts giving you those leadership skills and that being part of your identity. If you were to share an idea with a teacher who's struggling to help a learner, you know, take on the identity, like the positive identity of somebody who has low vision, as somebody who's lived it your whole life, you know, what advice would you give them for that?
I think getting students together, whether a pair, whether a foursome, is so powerful. It is a lot of logistics, but it is worth it. And I think the ripples are immeasurable. For, you know, when I go out and do a student program and I always talk with staff who come with their student and we're together for the day, we know those students who they come in the room, their arms are crossed, they're locked down. You're not getting in. I was told I need to be here, so I'll put up with it. Finding a way through that barrier. A lot of times we'll just use the eyeball. It's just the human eyeball. It's not your eyeball. A 3D eyeball, a model of the eyeball, a huge blow up of the eyeball. To just start talking about this little thing that so much of the world, you know, we think at least up to 80, 85% of what we learn comes through vision. So you who are visually impaired, whether limited vision or no vision, you are accessing things differently. And getting the students together to just share what we know from the dorm, when they realize the peers in the room, they get it, they're VI too, that guard most often comes down just a little bit and they start, I kind of like how he does things or what she's doing. Okay, I want a little part of that. Even virtually, not as good as in the room, we know that. But we did, during COVID, once a month, virtual meetups and I was invited in to STP. Cheryl Austin then was the staff member who created this, a group of middle schoolers, and then we did a high school evening. Those middle schoolers, I'll bet they still remember it. It was 3 years ago at least. And they had so much fun just interacting with each other. So I think that getting them together where they can feel more relaxed and a openness to who am I, how do I like myself as somebody who has a visual impairment, I think that's one of the things I wonder, you know, if I'd had that at 8 years old, at 10 years old, at 12 years old, you know, I had a positive, nurturing environment, but did not have that piece. And I think I'm very aware how important that is, because it took me a long time to figure out. I always focused on the skill. Okay, we need to learn the skill. And until I feel good about it inside my head, I call it the soft, squishy stuff, that skill isn't going to be as meaningful. I need to accept what that skill can do for me and what I get out of using that skill or that tool. So I think that self-identity piece, finding a way into that. And I think if you can do a reading club, talking about a book of characters, and it doesn't have to be VI, but there are a lot of good young adult fiction out there that I know. I think the Perkins librarian, I think her name is Kim Carlson, puts out lists of books on topics. And there are lots of good youth librarians who can help find those titles. And I think doing a book club can be an easier entry into getting to know each other because you're talking about a book.
Those are such great ideas. I would have never even thought about having a book club. Speaking of identity, I just want to circle back to part of your identity. And you talked about yourself and you mentioned that you'd gone through school and you brought us all the way to ABD. But you did finish your dissertation. Oh, yeah. So you are Dr. Foster. I've been waiting for you to bring that part up and you have skipped it.
Oh, in education, I think we do that. It was like a presentation. I took it on as, huh, I wonder what I can learn.
Yeah.
It was a very long path. I had been told I do a fabulous lit review and I understand not so much on statistical analysis. That's not my strong suit. I'm okay with that. I love digging into the literature because it always brings up new ideas of, huh, how can I put that in a program? Or, you know, I caught the, what was the article? Social cost is a phrase that I love because if I pick up this telescope and use it in front of peers, there can be a social cost to that. There are going to be peers who will see it as a way of making fun, or peers like a positive cost. Huh, what is that? I'm curious. That's cool. Want to know what that is. But I loved that phrase. And it was that digging into a strand of, you know, you start with one article and it leads you to five more articles and then 15 articles. It gave me a phrase that encapsulates so much. It's so critical for whether, you know, I was a kid in the 1970s growing up and kids in the 2020s are feeling the same things. And that's where I think as staff, if we understand this better, we get into how that student's world is affected and what can I help the student figure out what they can do, what they want. I think that's the power of our work.
I love that. I wrote down the word social cost because I'm going to do more research on it because I fully agree with you. Well, I want to honor everybody's time and wrap up here, although you and I could talk for so long. So the premise of our whole podcast is that you don't have to be perfect every single day. The goal is really just to take a step forward, one step forward. You've already given us a lot of advice, but if you could just give us, you know, one piece of advice to help our community take a step forward into being better teachers, what would you say?
How many times we've heard this phrase, it's what popped in my head. Show grace to yourself. We have a very demanding role. High caseloads, lack of understanding from administrators, our educator peers, knowing what we do, limited networks when, you know, you're living in not an urban area, and ever changing, my goodness, the changes that are happening with technology and trying to stay informed. There is a lot. And I think exactly what you said, if, you know, at the end of the day, I can identify, I did this right. I can remember a day, and I still, the feeling in the same day, I made a student cry. I wasn't paying attention to how frustrated the student, I wasn't picking up on it. I was so focused. And then I made a student super mad. She was high schooler, locked down on me, wouldn't speak. I wasn't paying attention. And I was more focused on what I wanted to happen out of this lesson. And I, you know, every time I kind of that feeling of I'd flog myself for it, it was, I need to show grace. Did I learn from it? Yes, I did.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Showing grace for both the learner and yourself, because what we're doing is hard stuff. And we've talked about the identity level, and we as O&Ms, very much so, and as TBIs, we hold space for people to step into a different identity level. And that is really hard. And sometimes, even if it's the skill level, us having, I have my lesson plan. This is what we have to get done. I have my objective for today. And they're like, I'm 16 and my first boyfriend just broke up with me. So not today. Mm-hmm. Whatever their case may be, we're all human. And allowing us to have that grace to be human is so beautiful. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing more about yourself and your story, Cindy, and giving us so much advice. I have taken notes. I've starred and circled so many things that you have said already. I can't wait to go back and re-listen to everything that you just shared so that way I can begin to implement it even more. Thank you.
Well, thank you for asking. This was fun. It's an honor. It's an honor. Thank you.
As orientation and mobility specialists, we know that one of the most difficult things to do is to teach night lessons. It's just an area where we may not be the most proficient, specifically because we don't often teach it because we are not often working during that time, which is why it is so important to be able to have those skills and transfer them onto your learners in a safe, efficient, and impactful way. Because you're part of this community, we want to offer you the opportunity to skip all of the messiness of the learning part of it, learn from our mistakes, and set yourself up for success with a free workshop as well as a full lesson plan on how to teach night travel to your learners. It doesn't matter what type of learner, it doesn't matter what their visual impairment is. This lesson plan will be able to be customizable within like 5 minutes. And it comes with all of the materials that you need and links to all of the resources for you to get any tools that you might want to bring with you. All you have to do is go to alliedindependenceonline.com/travel. That's alliedindependenceonline.com/travel to go grab your free workshop and done for you lesson plan on night travel.